It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. Good to see my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Always good to be here with you, Sean.
This is the time of year. Well, and I was going to just let me throw this in the mix first, where it's all fishing, except if y'all, you know, you want a dove field, we're going to start talking about, you know, start thinking about. It's always land management with me. I know,
but well,
I mean, if you're going to be, you know,
if
dove field,
start planting soybeans. It's time to start doing that. Chufers, getting ready to start doing that.
Yep.
You know, so I mean, there's a lot of things.
But the problem is here, just for a second, and our guest in studio, great to have him back on the show, Captain Richard Rutland, who is even part of this conversation a little bit. But
I told him we was going to talk about brim fishing.
Yeah, we are going to talk about brim fishing. Yes, big brim out there. But the tough part of it too, though, is before you hop on and just mow to get ready to plant that stuff, you got to think about those fields growing back up are often great cover for turkey poults and quail chicks.
That's exactly right.
Tough thing. You got to kind of go through it. So, yeah, we'll talk about that in future shows. All right, ladies and gentlemen, world-renowned and great guy all around, Captain Richard Rutland in studio. Good to see you.
Thank you, man. Glad to be here.
Good to have you on here. I want to talk first about the fish that made the most news this week. I got the most text about, and I actually gave up the truth about me on the air and said, this is dangerous now. Hopefully I get police protection. I'm one of the group of people that makes decisions on saltwater records in the state of Alabama. There's a group of us when records get put. We're on a group, and the emails go out, and we debate amongst ourselves. And, you know, most of the time it's just like, yeah, that's fine. This had been a subject in the past. And the fish we're talking about, y'all, right now is a 7-pound snook. Caught in, I think, Soldier's Creek. Okay, this is and people reacted. There's never been this happened. It has happened. We've had snook caught here. The question we had in the records portion of it, that I was a combatant in this debate, is should we have records for saltwater species that aren't, they haven't been native here?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard several reports over the past probably 4 or 5 years, I would say, of over in that.
Little Lagoon was the first one I heard of. I'm not saying that was the first one.
Right.
I heard of Little Lagoon. That's been years ago.
And Orange Beach Pass.
Right, okay. Yeah. So over in that neck of the woods. But I also have heard of two different reportings of snook in Halls Mill Creek the past 2 years. And seen pictures and heard it from the horse's mouth. Hey, I caught a snook off my dock. I was laughing. It was either yesterday or the day before when the news broke on the station about the snook, and mm-hmm. right after they're talking about on record, you know, they cut the trees down, you know, the growth rings on the trees showed it was been the hottest summer we ever had was last year, you know, so it's like,
yep.
But we've kind of seen this over the past several years. I remember this is way back. I just remember what boat I was in, so I know about what time.
I understand that
what
logic.
Year it was. It was probably 2010, 11, 12, somewhere right in there. So I was still in my first guide boat. And we caught a permit on a trip. We thought it was a pompano, and I took a picture of it. And back then, I was real good friends with Dr. Ship through the rodeo. And I texted a picture to Dr. Ship, and Dr. Ship said, "Oh yeah, that's for definitely a permit," you know. And then it seems like
The last couple of years in the rodeo, I think this year and the year before that, talking to Dr. Sean Powers, be like, yeah, we had a lot of people thinking they had real chunker pompano come in.
Right.
And they were permit.
Mm-hmm. And they're real hard to tell from, you know, just us.
Especially if you don't expect to see it, because it looks so much like a pompano, you just, okay, that's another pompano.
Yeah, they even have their yellow coloring on the bottom and everything, but their rear dorsal and anal fin are a little longer than a pomp. So
did y'all turn that in for a state record?
No, I didn't. I didn't even know.
But I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about, because if you pick some, you know, saltwater species we don't have, giant trevally or mm-hmm. something like that, if somebody caught one here, because, you know, who knows how it would have got, does that qualify as a record? You know, should we have record?
That was
a debate we had in the group.
The debate I would have is say yes, because there might be another one caught in a couple of weeks.
It might be, or it might be a once, you know.
And once in a lifetime. But I know through the years, I'd have to have the state record book to look at. But I know through the years there's been fish caught, like the permit, that are like the snook, that you don't regularly catch around here, but it's in the state record.
Yeah, so
I mean, they just caught a few of them.
But that's the debate we had on snook. I said yes for snook. I was one of the yes votes to make it, you know, to be records. Because I see what you're talking about. I see, now I think wintertime's a limiting factor. I mean, it's plenty warm, even if we don't have a hot year, it's plenty warm here for snook to be in the waters. But then, you know, this thing called fall and winter happens. Do they get killed off? Do they ever have a chance to stay?
Right.
I don't know that. I think it gets down to 50s and snook, or 60s, and snook die, I think.
Yeah, you remember back in, I want to say it was about 2008 or 9, something like that. They had a bad freeze down in South Florida, and heck, it almost...
Just a couple of years ago, they had that, too.
Right. Yeah. I know back in 09, I saw a lot of pictures of just mats and mats of dead tarpon, dead snook all over the place. But back to the record fish, the last controversy I heard, big controversy about a world record or a state record fish, was bonefish. It was Matthew Isbell, Bama Beach Bum.
Yeah, you're reading my brain here. Okay,
yeah. he caught a bonefish on a this is back when he was guiding before he was rich and famous,
before he was a big YouTube star.
He caught a bonefish, and they didn't give him the record because they said it was like 12 inches, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very small, but they said it was not a good representation of the species.
That discussion's come up, too. Should the limit size to keep and be a record be from a state where they're
where there is a limit?
Yeah, and how do we, you know, because there's not a limit or a size limit or a creel limit in Alabama on bonefish because we don't have regulations for them because we don't have any.
My vote
is it goes in the state record.
No matter what size?
We don't have a limit, but if you start catching them, let's just say they start showing up. 20 years ago, we didn't have manatees around here, did we?
I don't know. I mean, probably over the history of time.
Let's say 30 years. We didn't have manatees around here. Now there's manatees everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So who's to say?
What's the record on that?
I don't know. It's a bunch, I think. But what I'm saying is, who's to say that in the next 10 years, 20 years, bonefish might be kind of a regular deal?
But you don't know. I said this during the midday show last week. I said, if you think I'm sorry now, you add permit and bonefish into the mix we have of fish inshore.
Yeah.
You may not see me at work very often. They have speckled trout, redfish, snook, permit, and bonefish. Be something that would add some more trips too.
Yeah, pretty neat, you know. But I think it's kind of a fluke thing that's happening. It'll you know, the universe, the environment has a way of working itself out.
Yeah, wintertime will clear all
that. They sneak up here, you know. You never know too. You know what I mean? It sounds like they're saying we're gonna have another hot summer. And really, for the past couple of winters, it's been fairly mild, except for a couple of localized events.
So I don't know. I'd love to see them. And I've been lucky over the years to catch them down in Florida, and they're damn fun.
Oh yeah,
they're a fun fish to catch.
Folks ask me. Well, I people don't ask me, but if anybody ever did ask me, hey, if you could only catch one fish one way, you know, the rest of your life, blah blah blah, I'll tell them all the time. Fly fishing for bonefish is unbelievable.
Most fun you can have with your clothes on.
It is so much fun. It is just light your hair on fire. Golly, they are tough.
Yeah, they are tough, but it
must be fun.
It is exciting. It's something that I've, you know, got to do a lot in South Florida as well. Yeah, they're awesome fish. They're awesome fish. And maybe we'll get a population of them here, but it's going to take a while. Let's talk about more of the fish we have here. We are heading into a full moon in May.
Mm-hmm.
Honey hush. If you're a trout fisherman, this is Christmas right here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It is. Folks been asking me, always are asking me about a report and what's going on with fishing. And my standard answer to everybody probably the past 2 weeks is, if you have a favorite place that you like to catch speckled trout right now, you need to go to that favorite place because there's most likely some fish there right now.
And that's the thing that, your partner and buddy Bobby Abrascato talks about too. And it's tough because we want to hear, well, they're just on flats, or they're just on the beach, but he said, well, they're on the gas rigs too. Like, how can they? But they're there, and they're, you know, they're in 2 feet of water, and they're in 20 feet of water.
Mm-hmm. They are just absolutely ever. This is always like the magic time of, like, I don't know if we're really like spring or summer right now. It feels like summer outside, but
we're still in spring.
Yeah, by the calendar, we're still spring. Yeah,
right. So, but it's just that magical time. And the fun part about right now is the bite is so clean. You know what I mean? I've only knock on wood.
Yeah, how many hard heads have come across
this? Well, I mean, we're catching a few hard heads, like when we're popping cork fishing or something. But when you're, like, doing a bunch of wade fishing and stuff, you're not getting bit off by bluefish yet.
A few Spanish
around. I think we've only hooked one ladyfish in the past couple of weeks. You know,
that's a record.
So it's clean. It's very clean now. It's gonna get worse as we go on as it warms up.
Yeah, but it changes. It changes as much as your tackle changes when you're beach fishing next month in July. And you catch one trout, and then you get cut off three or four times and re-rig and catch one trout catch a ladyfish. And then,
got to bring a lot of hooks.
Man, I tell you what, probably the month of June and into July, I probably do go through more of my tackle than normally you just look at, I know you don't as a pro guide using it, but stuff piles up. You're like, I don't need to go get any more KO hooks. I don't need to. During June, you're like, dang, we got two and one's rusty. Who's going to tie this one? This is all we got left in the boat. Coming back, we're going to talk more speckled trout fishing, and we'll keep it inshore and go offshore with Captain Richard Rutland. And, of course, we're just less than a week out from the start of snapper season.
Yep.
683,000 pounds for this year. I think I did my redneck math the other day. I think with that new allotment, we get another 13,000 fish or something like that. So, y'all make sure to catch small ones. Report
this one. Catch my foul.
There you go. Right, be right back. All right, welcome back to Bluefish Chat on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Captain Richard Rutland with his favorite techniques for getting that toothy bite. So right now you're saying that it's nice because those fish are, if you got a favorite place to catch speckled trout, which is in the mouth, man. But you go there right now. So that's where I would pick your brain on, because I do this time of year. I like wade fishing. I like fishing shallow stuff, but just this time of year. But I haven't gone, but the reports, like hearing from you and others, that if people want to fish a gas rig, there's trout on the gas rigs too.
Oh yeah, yep, they're burnt. I have not personally been out to the gas rigs yet. That's not really my I like that shallow water.
Yeah, I think people that they don't want to even mess with that. They just want to go to, you know.
Yeah, but they're burning them up out there right now. So like I said, it's kind of everywhere. You know, they're catching them around most of the public reefs and stuff in the south end, like the shrimp boats and the CCA reefs and I saw two or three boats on the Boykin Reef right outside Little Dolphin Island the other day. So I mean, they're, like I said, they're just kind of everywhere. I've been mainly focusing on the flats. I am just a wade fishing fanatic. I wish I could wade fish every day of the year around here.
Since I haven't wade fished yet, I may be going here come next weekend for sure. Can I wet wade yet? Because as I've gotten older, my tolerance for cold water's gotten less. I used to wade in barge when I was young. What's it feel like now?
It's okay. It's absolutely perfect. Okay. I made my mind up. I want to say it was last Thursday or Friday. I think it was last. I know it was for a fact. It was a week ago today. It was last Thursday, and I got out of the water. I was wearing my waders, and I got out of the water. I took my waders off, and my pants and my legs and my socks and everything were just as wet if I'd been
from
just
sweat.
From sweating, you know?
So I was like, and that's when you made the transition.
Yeah, that's when I was like, man, I'm putting them up. So I gave them a good wash and hung them up and put them in storage for till next spring. But it's absolutely perfect.
Then a little cold front's going to come through, and you're going to pull them out one more time.
Nah, I don't think so.
what are you throwing right now? Like, what's tied off? When you ease over and wade, what are you throwing?
Man, the past week and a half.
Top water
at
first.
Top water has been unbelievable. And we were, believe it or not, today was a bluebird day, not a cloud in the sky, and we were catching fish on top water at 11 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, there's those days that the old mentality was that once the sun gets up, you know, the fish are shy of the water. But then some thought out there is it's actually because of dissolved oxygen. So later in the year when the sun gets up, that water doesn't have, as it gets daylight, it has less
right.
dissolved oxygen.
I never
so maybe
thought
they
about
move.
That, but that makes sense.
I mean, I always thought about it because they were spooky,
mm-hmm.
right? They wouldn't, but some people have, I don't know that it's true, but as that sun gets up, that water warms up just enough that it loses oxygen. That's why they pull back. I don't know.
I was doing a seminar the other night over in the Eastern Shore, and I was telling those guys, talking about topwater fishing with those guys at Salt Strong over there in Daphne. And how I described it to them is this time of year, right around these, especially around kind of around these moons when they're about to start spawning, they are just angry. They are yeah. mad, you know.
It's kind of crazy, too. Here's a fish that, like, a snapper kind of get tough to catch when they go to spawn. You mm-hmm. still catch them, but trout are the opposite. Spawning, they chomp more.
Yeah, I feel like my mindset on that is they when they go to spawn that probably takes a lot of energy mm-hmm. to do all of that.
Yeah,
and
plus
so
all
that,
the eggs the females created. That's insane. How much you know a pound of eggs? How much they got to eat to create
right,
a pound of eggs?
Right. So that's why I feel like they get really fired up around. But they are angry. You know what I mean? And when And maybe like the bigger the females and whatnot, when they don't really bed like a brim or a bass or something, but when they get in those areas where they're spawning, you know, there's something annoying freaking swimming by them going click, 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 pow. They're just going to hit it, you know. It's almost like sometimes right now you can't even keep it away from them if you wanted to. You know what I mean? Like you'll.
Oh, you're killing me now. You're killing me, Rutland. I mean,
okay, so we say top water. So what are we talking about top water? What is your go-to top water bait?
What I've been throwing lately that's been working really well, and of course I've been – I kind of have a different couple of top waters that I like for each condition. Lately, when I've had good, fairly smooth conditions or maybe chopped up just a little bit, I really like the Mira Lure She-Dog, and especially Hot Pink. The Hot Pink, I don't know what it is about Hot Pink. There's not anything in the sea that swims around that's Hot Pink, but those speckled trout love them. And then if it's more like Miracom, like Slickcom this morning when I was fishing, I was throwing the Rapala Skitter V. It's a smaller profile, doesn't make quite as much noise. It's a little bit more subtle. And then when I get in some more choppy situations, I really, really, really love the Heaton Super Spook. That's got the three treble hooks on it.
Yeah.
And if I know that I'm going to be around some big fish, I'm definitely throwing that Super Spook. It makes a ton of racket. You can throw the Joker 5 miles.
Yeah.
And I love those big profile lures when you go look for a big.
So how many times you get hooked by the treble hook while you're wake fishing? Because I know you have to.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I'm pretty good about.
You have got to be careful with
keeping my hands
hook.
Out of the
Although
way.
Although the flip side of that is with a topwater hook and everything in the boat, and then you see a trout bust it, roll on the thing, and not get hooked. And you're like, wait a second. If I'm in the same zip code, I get hooked. By this thing. Yeah.
You could walk by it and look at it and get hooked in the
shirt. And that trout just rolled all over it and didn't get a hook in him.
You know, and I remember, I don't know, we're talking about 40-something years ago, I guess, maybe 50 years ago, however long ago, when I was in the sporting goods business, and the Hot Pink Mirror Lure came out. You know, and I'm got all the colors, you know, and I'm thinking, who in the world's going to buy a Hot Pink? But I got it. It's a new color. And people started buying it and using it and started more and more. And it turned out to be the hottest color that I sold in a mirror lure was a Hot Pink. Who would have thought Hot Pink? And then here today, 50 years later, whatever it is, Hot Pink's still a really great color.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Kind of I try to think like a fish or try to – put my
you I know, knew try there's to, something try, wrong with you
try to wrap my brain around what they're seeing.
Yeah,
and I almost feel like maybe sometimes fish are like a, you know, like dogs seeing black and white, right?
Yeah.
So they just see shades, they don't really see an actual color and for
pink,
some reason
yeah.
for some reason maybe I have no idea scientifically wise. We'll have to ask Dr. Powers about that, if they actually see color or not.
Yeah.
But it might be just that shade of pink. It
looks more like to their eyes, looks more like a mullet, maybe.
Or it looks natural to them somehow, some way. Because you throw a Hot Pink lure that sinks, and they'll eat it good too. Sometimes
I learned fishing next to our buddy there that that he outfished me anyways, but I was throwing, I don't know, chrome or blue or something like that. This has been decades ago. And when he was doing five or six fish to every one, I said, hey, man, you got any more of them pink tomfires? And since then, I've been all of them.
Eventually, the pride goes away.
That's right. You're like, hey, man, what do you think? You got any of them? I'll get after them. So,
I'll even buy one from you.
Yeah, the price out there is expensive. But when you're – okay, you won't stop throwing topwater when they'll eat it till 11 o'clock. But after that, let's just say it's a day where they do quit. On that top water, what are you going to this time of year? What are you throwing?
Always to the slick lure next. And it kind of depends on where I am and what I'm doing, but you want to throw something in when you're in whatever area you're living in. You want to match the hatch, right? Mm-hmm. So right now I'm fishing shallow around just big schools of mullet all over the place. Lots of finger mullet, and then there's been a lot of anchovies or glass minnows, bigger glass minnows that are like that 4 to 5 inches long. So I'm trying to do something to mimic what they're living around, what they're feeding on. But the slick lure has just been dynamite. It's been dynamite since the first day we got our hands on it, yeah. However many years ago. But I've been doing really well on that.
What colors on that are you?
Yeah, I was going to kind of get into the colors. We've been whenever I set out like on a wade with some of my clients, I try to have everybody tied on with something different, right? Like I have my confidence colors, but also I'll put my clients on some of my other confidence colors and see what works. And it's funny. Yesterday on a wade with some of my clients that I've been fishing for a while, man, they started catching them before I did, which is kind of rare when we're when we're wading down a bank. And I was like, hey, man, I was like, Bo, what color you got over there, you know? And he's like, oh, they're hitting that croaker. I was like, all right. And I was throwing P-Mint, so like kind of a
– then you
– oh, yeah, I swapped over, of course, immediately, and I got everybody swapped over, and we all started hitting on it. So
that's funny how that works.
It is.
But it does work like that.
And it's funny. It's day to day. You know, I would say, like, if you find them eating a certain color in a certain area, that's probably pretty reliable as long as you're keeping the same conditions. But – it's funny when you go from fishing like the West End grass flats to somewhere at the bridge to Sand Island to Fort Morgan to
you see a difference in that?
Oh yeah, the color wise, it's funny. You never know which one's going to get hot. So
you think that has to do with what the watercolor is?
I think so.
How stained
watercolor, and also bottom type too. I find that croaker color, which is kind of like you tan with that. It's got a little bit of blue fleck and a mm-hmm. pearl colored belly. It seems to work great over a sandy or a shell bottom. It blends right in, and that's what I always say about picking colors is I want my lure to blend into the conditions the best it can.
Because that's what a real bait fish would
be
doing.
That's going to give you the most natural look. You know, you don't want something that jumps off the page, which blows my mind when
except
you can catch them on like pink and chartreuse,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Something of that nature. But and it doesn't always work that way. So that's why you got to kind of throw the tackle box at them a little bit. And like I said, fish your confidence colors.
But this time of year, too, what the fish are going to be, the biggest are going to be the females for sure, you know, all year. Are you getting size? Because I'm thinking about what are we getting from the changes in creel limit and you know, the slot limit here? Are you seeing day in, day out the amount of time you spend on the water, the fish average size getting bigger? Or are you seeing anything?
It feels like it right now.
It does.
It feels like it right now. I'll tell you, the past two wade trips I've had this week, we've had to let go more fish than we could keep. We had trouble catching what I would call keeper size, which I don't really like keeping them bigger than about 18 inches or
Absolutely. Throw me in that briar patch. Coming right back. Board Captain Richard Rutland right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our guest, Captain Richard Rutland, in studio and talking. The glory days of trout fishing are here. I mean, this is, if you're looking at the time, the full moon in May, right before and right after, if you had to schedule a trip, if you came from, I don't know, Schenectady, New York or something, this would be when you do it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And if you're both
I always tell everybody, you know, when everybody asks me, when's the best time to go? And I was like, I don't really care when it is. As long as you have good weather, we're going to catch some fish this time of year, you know. But you get on the front side. And heck, some years we've seen it where the fishing's better on the backside of the moon, of the full moons. But that
usually you got a couple days usually afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
you'll see the full moon. They'll just be chewing the rod tips off, and then it drastically drops off after the moon. And that seems to be more like July, August, September kind of pattern. But generally speaking, like your May and June full moons are going to be just wide open around those moons when they get to that. Heeing and sheeing, as Captain Bobby likes to say, you know.
Love time. You know, we was talking about bait a while ago, and you try to match the hatch, whatever's around you, whatever they're feeding on. You know, and I think about menhaden. I don't hear many people talk about using menhaden for baiting like we was talking about in the break. Sean was talking about up in the Mobile River, you know, catching menhaden and using them up there. I knew more people use them up there than around Dolphin Island. And I asked you during the break if you clean fish every day, just about. Do you fillet many that have menhaden in their belly?
I sure do. They definitely feed on menhaden. And Sean was talking about croaker fishing a little while ago or whatever, you know, wanting to find like that perfect size croaker, right? Well, the speckled trout are one of those species. They don't know how big they are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like a bass.
You know, we catch, literally, I've cleaned fish that are 16, 17 inches long, you know, like maybe approaching a 2 pound fish, pound and a half, 2 pound fish. And they'll have a 6 or 8 inch long pogie in their stomach and then ate whatever we threw at them, too.
How about that?
And, so they really don't know their limits.
They don't know they're full, it don't sound like.
No, sir, but they definitely feed on menhaden. I'm not a big using pogies for trout fishermen. I would rather use like a finger mullet. We're going to use live bait, a finger mullet, a shrimp, a croaker, something of that nature. What I can't wrap my brain around sometimes with that is it's hard to catch and find, in my opinion, the right size. Menhaden.
Yeah.
They are very plentiful all around Alabama.
Catch plenty of them, that's for sure.
But most of the time, they seem like the majority of them are those big honker ones, you know.
The snapper size.
Yeah, that you want to take offshore and snapper fish or ling fish with, something of that nature. So that's always the challenge with that.
Okay. Well, I don't ever hear anybody talking about using menhaden.
Mm-hmm.
But
I know a lot of the tournament guys that are always targeting the giants, they really like using those menhaden.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So you dared mention offshore. So before we wrap up today, we got a while to go, but let's talk about offshore. I know that's probably not in your radar right now as good as speckled trout fish it is, but you got to be thinking about those offshore trips.
Oh yeah, for sure. We fished Butch Theory and Corey Quint and I teamed up and fished a cobia tournament. I think it was May the 4th, so it's still a little bit early. We did not catch any, and I don't think very many people in the field caught very many. I think there was 50 boats and only like 8 or 9 fish got caught.
You're pretty damn good at it, Richard. You're pretty damn good at catching ling. And
we covered some miles.
People are saying that the migration is not, you know, and I really don't get after. I don't go fish ling specifically now. I catch them when we're snapper fishing. Mm-hmm. But it used to be, we'd go by May. You'd have some migration coming down the beach, and
right. And I kind of go back and forth with this. I kind of got a little irritated when everybody started changing the limits on cobia, especially, you know, it started kind of in Florida, and then that limit change migrated up here to Alabama, and now it's across the whole Gulf Coast. There's no science backing any of it up, you know what I mean? It's just fishermen fussing. I would say though that, you know, because everybody wants to catch them all glorified and everything, sightcast them on the beach in the spring, you know, that's a lot of fun and everything, but it seems like plenty of fish seem to show up at the ships and on the reefs and the wrecks and everything offshore. Between last year and really the year before last, 2 years ago, was unreal. I mean,
that's
such,
right.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Richard?
They're not doing the same thing that they were doing before, you know, and that's not our fault. It's not the fish's fault. They're just doing something different.
Doing,
you know,
fish
the,
stuff.
The but do you think we have changes in front of our eyes every day?
True. But do you think we have, like, it's not a hatch, but do you think we have good years and bad? Like, those years, is it that they we got lucky and the migration really hit in here for a while, or is it that the whole population of cobia are more for that? You know, like
I think you are seeing some good year classes and some bad year classes. The thing about cobia is they grow extremely fast. They're one of the fastest growing fish in the sea. You know, like I guess like the top three, I believe, that we have around our area.
Right. Dolphin, triple tail, and ling
always grow extremely fast. I want to say a 30-pound ling is only like a two-year-old fish.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
You know, so they grow really fast. So it's just really hard to tell. And you see funny things too, like in the wintertime, like when people are chumming the tuna at the lumps over off of Louisiana, they're catching ling out there in February.
That's right. They do not leave the coast. I can tell you that. I've caught them in the wintertime out there around rigs. Mm-hmm. So they don't leave. I know that for sure. And we caught one a couple of weeks ago, 30, 35 pounds.
Right.
You know, in 200 to 5,300 foot of water.
Right. So. I just don't know that they're doing the same things that they have been doing. And the fishermen fuss, and then there's been no stock assessment done in years and years. And that kind of irritates me a little bit.
Okay, they would, because if they're going to make recommendations, I like recommendations based on science. And we've mentioned speckled trout, something I know you're very good at as well, is catching flounder.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So bring it inshore for a second. I mean, anecdotally, it seems like we're doing a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
You're feeling somebody who goes after them, or how's that population?
Oh, flounder's through the roof good. It's been unbelievable. And I think it has everything to do with state management. When the state came in and limited, I think the big factor that really helped it a lot was limiting the commercial catch.
That November closure?
The November closure, and then the commercial catch, moving it from an unlimited amount of fish you could keep to 40 fish per trip. No matter how you take them, on hook and line or gig or a net, however it gets done, I think that's what really has really helped rebound it. And then, of course, the closure as well, because mm-hmm. that's when a lot of fish we're getting taken is in the month of November when they make their mass exodus out of the shallow.
All the commercial fishermen knew that's when you go catch them.
That's right.
I mean, you could skip a couple months from fishing for them, but go in November, you're going to catch them.
Yep, that's what they call getting that Christmas money.
That's right. Now, the other thing, too, the hatchery.
Oh, you know,
I don't know how well that is. I wish there was a way they could check them and check their DNA or check something to see if, you know, some of these fish are from the hatchery. Because they've been doing that for how many years? Four or five, somewhere in there. So those 4 or 5 years, I mean, they could be the 3, 4, 5 pounders now,
yep.
I guess.
Dr. Dormat, Dylan Keen, who's the flounder PhD that worked, is a student under Sean Powers, and the hatchery have been comparing notes and trying to figure out a way to see, to check and see. You know, there's some dyes they could put in there or introduce some minerals to them that would get in them. But the thing is that what they're worried about is if they do something like that, what does it do to the
food, offspring?
Or to the food quality of who's eating it. You know, you don't want to kind of mess with it too much, because you could introduce some things there that might not be unforeseen consequences there.
Yeah.
But,
well, hopefully one day they'll figure out a way to check and see if that program is working, because mm-hmm. they're releasing what? I mean, they release it.
I have no idea.
Thousands and thousands and thousands. I don't know if it's 100,000 or
there's varying. It's a bunch. Ways to look at that. You know, some people say as low as like 1% make it. You know, so if they let 100,000 go, only 1,000 are going to make it.
That's 1,000.
Oh yeah, for sure it's 1,000. But so there's a lot of factors there, but I think it's definitely making a difference.
Yeah. Well, I hope so, and I hope they continue the program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's even 0.5%, if you do it every year, year after year,
that's right.
Then eventually it's got to help some. Something has helped. I mean, from 2010 to 2022.
Yeah, it's 19 or 20.
Yeah, 21.
2020 is about when it kind of.
Yeah, 2020 started catching a few more. And then 21, a few more, and 22, really pretty good. 23, great. 24, looks like it's going to be really good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but there for about a 10-year period, I mean, it was really no reason to go target flounder.
Right.
You go catch one here, one there, but you wouldn't catch a limit. I mean, I didn't know anybody back, you know, in that 10-year span mm-hmm. that would catch a limit.
No.
So
not at all.
Things have really changed now.
It feels like to me like the old days, like when my dad and I, like before I started guiding or tournament fishing or anything, we used to just go fun fishing. Mm-hmm. It seemed like even when we went slip cork, we loved to slip cork the rigs back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad and I, we'd catch flounder slip corking out there all the time. Or you go do it at the bridge or wherever. We would always accidentally catch a few flounder every mm-hmm. trip, you know, and then that would happen a little bit early in my guiding career, and then it just totally was toast.
Gone.
And yeah. then the Sea Lab called me and wanted us to go tag on 75 of them, man.
It didn't work in catching
oh
them.
My goodness gracious, Dylan and I had to work so daggum hard
yeah.
the first couple of years of that, and then it went from like, you know, working our tails off for 20 days to catch 100 fish to catching 300
right
in 20 days.
That's the best metric. You know? That's the best metric.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, right. That's strong.
Coming right back. More with Captain Richard Rutland from Cold Blooded Fishing right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our guest, Captain Richard Rutland. Before we go further, too, I know, like, I'm going to just guess now through the full moon, you're booked.
Oh, yeah.
But somebody wants to get on the list for full moons in the future or just some great summertime fishing. How do they do it?
You can go to my website, coldbloodedfishing.com. You find us on Instagram, Facebook. Call me on the phone.
Yeah. You give out your telephone number, right?
Yeah, it's plastered all over the internet.
Great guy to fish with. I had a joy of fishing with him. We fished around each other for a long time, but it was last year, the first time you and I fished together. That was a hoot, man. Had a great time.
Yeah, we were on the struggle bus trying to win the pro amateur South Alabama tournament just because I think the time of year was tough back then. But dang sure ain't tough right now, man. Golly.
That's great news.
Yeah.
The Speckled Trout have really come back. You know, I had some people telling me that last year was not that great of a year.
Right.
Is that right?
I had several people, several folks voice that to me as well. Last year, I would say, was not through the roof, but it wasn't like terrible by any means. Not for me anyway.
Yeah.
Back to your point, you know, when you're saying, man, it's great to hear, we always get to this point, it seems like, at the end of winter, right when spring's about to start, you're like, man, we had like a tough winter. Like, are there any fish out there? Are they all, you know, what's going on? And then all of a sudden you hit this, like I was talking about on the start of the show, this magic moment where there's just fish everywhere. And you're like, oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong. They're all good.
Yeah, it's they're like, still out there. Where have they been?
You know, yeah. I wonder that because it was kind of funny. Last fall, we had a really incredible start to our fall up in the Delta. It was like really like
yeah,
true.
I know. I was tracking what you were doing and then.
Yeah.
It was, then what?
Yeah. I, you know,
we were all banking on that. I was mm-hmm. like, okay, causeway fishing could be back. What I grew
conditions
up on,
were yeah, right?
It know? Was. It yeah. was. It was like what I've only been fishing the causeway since maybe 2007, I believe, 7 or 8. So I don't even know what it was like before
it
that.
Was pretty good.
We didn't fish in the fall or the winter. You know, you knew my dad. We were always offshore folks, right? So it was like. When wintertime or fall came, we started going to football games and baseball or, you know, football practice and doing all that. And then we didn't fish in the winter. And then spring came around, we started offshore fishing again. So I had no idea about how all of it went until I was an adult and out of the military and everything and back in Mobile. But this past year, it felt like to me some of that old school Delta fishing. We can go up there and catch a hundred good ones. You know what I mean?
That was always the goal, man. If you could break triple digits, that was always that causeway day.
It didn't last long.
It didn't. It felt like a little bit of fresh water bump down. It really, it almost just maybe missed it in Birmingham or something, you know, and then this fresh water. I think it has a lot to do with that Tennessee Tom Bigby. I feel like they're letting a lot more water out of that, and it's not really the natural water that comes down the Alabama River and floods the Delta. I feel like they're letting more, which really doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it was so dry. The Mississippi River was at record lows last year, you know. So where did that water come from? I don't know why it cleaned it out. And then the next question is where do all those hundreds of thousands of fish go all winter? Because I damn sure didn't see them.
That is correct.
Yeah. they weren't like in the tidal rivers where I like to live. I don't know if they don't go out in the Gulf or they go somewhere else and then they come back in for the springtime stuff. That's something that the tagging program really could, you know, kind of helps us see some of those patterns. Because I've definitely seen a pattern over the last several years of like. Let's just say like fish caught at Dauphin Island in the summer and fish caught in the winter in the Mobile River.
Yeah.
You'll see a kind of a correlation there with that. So they're moving quite a bit, but you got to wonder about those Delta fish. Are they a different they must have a different thinking cap on than than some of the other ones.
You know, it's the same way with the king mackerel. I mean, the king mackerel fishing has been really tough the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get to October, November, they're out there by the millions.
Right.
You know, everybody's going out there wearing them out, you know. And then you come around to February, March, and go out chunking for tuna or catching tuna, and there's king mackerel skying everywhere out there.
Right.
And then you go to June, July, when normally that's when king mackerel fishing is really good.
Right.
And, man, it has been really tough the last several years.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know what – same way with them. I wish we could tag a bunch of king mackerel and
– see what they do.
Yeah, see what they do. Kind of like what they've done with the tarpon. I never dreamed tarpon went out and – 500,000 foot of water.
Yeah,
that was
never dreamed it
when that stuff came out because you watched them. Some of them do what we thought. Okay, they come up past Carabel, they're coming down the beaches doing this stuff, and then there's some of them that decide, hey, I'm gonna leave Tampa and swim clean across the Gulf to Venice.
Yeah,
like, what? You're not supposed to do that, and that's exactly what they did.
And in the wintertime, a fair amount of them are out in deep water, 500,000 foot of water, and I think the winter out there.
Wow.
You know, what's that about?
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Well, you got to think about a fish. They only got a couple of things on their mind, you know. They're wanting to – they got to eat. They got to reproduce. That, you know, they've got to have
– And then they eat and then they reproduce again.
Yeah, you know. So, I guess as long as you got those two things, you know.
Yeah. But you think about tarpon as being in 20, 30 foot or less is what our mentality is these years. That's where we catch them. You don't catch them out in 100 foot, 200 foot of water on reefs or anything, you know. So you're thinking they stay in this shallow water.
And you got to think all the years of talking and being friends with and in the same circles as people like Mike Theory and Skipper Theory and these guys that are live offshore all the time out in that deep water, they never come back. But, oh, yeah, we saw a big school of tarpon out there by the Dakota's rig today, you know. Like,
But then the tracker shows it.
I know.
They do it, so it's crazy.
Oh, man.
But are they in 500 foot of water out there? I'm talking, are they on top of the water?
Mm-hmm.
I mean. Maybe that's what it is. You don't see them because they're in 500 foot of water. They're deep. I don't know.
We're going to run out of time, but I don't know if those transmitters, how deep they can ping. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
If they could tell us how deep that fish was.
I believe the fish has to surface for the antenna to ping the satellite.
Well, there we go. Listen, we have run out of time, and that's good because you got me so fired up to go trout fishing. I'm going to tear out of here and go do exactly that. Captain Richard Rutland, come back and see us soon.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all for having me. I enjoyed it.
And good luck. With snapper season opening up.
Oh, yeah.
If we find a few out there.
I'll be excited for that to get some people inshore, outshore, offshore.
Yeah, it's like y'all are always excited when turkey hunting
turkeys,
is going on.
Yeah.
Keep us out there. And also CCA Star Tournament, if you want to sign up, that's going to open up this coming weekend as well. So the 25th, I think it goes live.
Yeah.
All right, y'all have a great one. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you, Richard.
Sir.